drone pilots who carry out targeted assassinations, undocumented immigrants who man the kill floors of industrial slaughterhouses, guards who patrol the wards of the United States' most violent and abusive prisons. In the new book, Dirty Work, journalist Eyal Press offers a paradigm-shifting view of the moral landscape of contemporary America through the stories of people who perform society's most ethically troubling jobs. Again, the name of the new book is Dirty Work, Essential Jobs and the Hidden Toll of Inequality in America. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Eyal Press to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me on.
Given your career in journalism, what brought you to this particular story of these jobs that are being performed by folks across the country?
Well, I've always been interested in inequality, certainly we have plenty of it in this country. So I've kind of, in my career, tended to report on people lower down on the social ladder, and certainly the jobs I write about in this book qualify as such. People who work in prisons, people who work in industrial slaughterhouses. But I've also, throughout my career as a book author, really been interested in questions and issues of moral conscience and how people navigate morally difficult situations. In fact, my last book, Beautiful Souls, was about the people who resist, who in a sense keep their hands clean when they're faced with really difficult moral dilemmas. And after writing that book, I got more and more interested in the stories of the folks who kind of get swept along and do dirty their hands, and hence this book, Dirty Work.
So the adage, out of sight, out of mind, certainly applies here. A point that you are making is that we are very shielded from these morally questionable activities that people are performing in our name, and people who are less privileged than we are.
Yeah, I mean, a big theme of the book is concealment. And, all of the, and I should say, I define dirty work a little differently than how most people think of it. A lot of people will think of, garbage workers or people who, the bouncer at a rowdy club, just a thankless, tough job. I define it a little differently as an unethical activity that society depends on and tacitly condones, but doesn't want to hear too much about. We depend on it and tacitly condone it because it's pretty central to the way we've kind of either structured our lives, the things we purchase, or the sort of social order we've accepted. But the last part of it is the key. We don't want to hear too much about it. So concealment, hiding this, is a big part of the book. We very rarely hear from the people who work behind the walls of jails and prisons, from the people who work inside industrial slaughterhouses, from the people who carry out drone attacks on drone bases. The whole program is swathed in secrecy.
That word concealment is fascinating to me. So who's doing the hiding?
I think that the hiding is sometimes I think the easiest answer to that is, it's the poultry company that wants to hide what's really going on from the consumers who buy the chicken. Or it's the private prison company in Florida that wants to hide the brutal conditions of many prisoners in the prison I look at. And there's truth to that, and I do write about that, and I think that's part of the story. But I also think that some of the hiding is on us. That is that we've become so distracted, and there are so many ways that we can kind of avert our eyes from morally troubling things that are done on our behalf or in our name. And so a lot of it is not necessarily secrecy so much as lacking the will to know about these things.
We figure that something is going on, but we don't want to know too much about it, basically to shield ourselves from how we could be impacted by what we know.
Yeah, and I should say I don't exclude myself, nor do I think that's an unnatural impulse, right?
Like, right.
We all sit down to the dinner table, and what we're eating, we have some sense that it's come from a faraway place. and made, you know, and certainly the growing preference consumers have for labels like humanely raised for the poultry or the you know, antibiotic free, there's this desire to have a sense that this isn't dirty. But you know, it's discomforting and it's unappetizing to think about, you know, the brutal conditions for the animals and also for the workers. That's not unusual. But I think when we, at a societal scale, when you replicate that, what ends up happening is this prevents us from asking questions about whether there might be other ways to organize, you know, our food system, or to organize, to not say rely on our jails and prisons to become de facto mental health asylums, which is what they are in this country.
For the people who are doing this work, I mean, you talk about the occupational hazards for the dirty work that they are doing, and these are psychological and emotional hardships, PTSD, stigma, shame, injury. I mean, yeah. There's a lot that they are, a lot of burden they are shouldering on our behalf. Talk a little bit about those risks and those burdens.
Yeah, I think that that's really a major, major theme of the book. And my hope, you know, we've had, since the pandemic, a real heightened awareness throughout the country, I think, of just the physical and health risks that working a job can entail, particularly because, you know, the folks who had to go and show up in person at their jobs when you know, COVID was at its peak, and now again, and a lot of people, as it happens, more privileged people in the main, were sheltering in place, sort of staying at their desks, and then getting their groceries delivered. That led to an awareness of, you know, oh wow, you can really get sick and injured and potentially die on the job. But there's another set of occupational hazards we talk a lot less about, and those are the psychic wounds of doing a job that you know, corrodes your dignity. That makes it hard for you to, that makes you not want to tell other people what you do. And, you know, in the case of, say, the mental health aide at the prison I write about, who was witnessing abuse and not saying anything about it, you know, she felt sullied by that, and she didn't want to tell people. She certainly didn't want to tell, you know, the elite psychiatrists who both earn more money and don't set foot in environments that are compromising like that.
AL Press is our guest on the roundtable this morning. The name of the new book is Dirty Work, Essential Jobs and the Hidden Toll of Inequality in America. So let us focus on that inequality for a moment. As you point out, another major part of this is that the burden of these jobs falls disproportionately on low-income workers, on undocumented immigrants, on women, and of course, people of color. So address that as to how those individuals end up in these jobs.
Yeah, so part of the answer to that is geographic. If you think about industrial slaughterhouses, jails, and prisons, where are they located? They're not located in upscale suburbs and in wealthy enclaves or in Silicon Valley. They're located generally in poorer parts of the country. Some of them, you know, during the prison boom, you had a lot of kind of rural areas said, okay, we'll take the jail or prison because we need the jobs. So part of the answer is geographic. You have folks living in places where those institutions exist. But part of it is also just a kind of sorting that happens where, like in for example, in the mental health profession, you know, there is a stigma attached to the idea of working in a jail or prison, in the mental health ward of a jail or prison. It pays less, it's less prestigious, and it's a violent, difficult environment to work in, and one where you may well find yourself witnessing abuse or just mistreatment that ends up implicating you in some way. And so who takes those jobs? It's not the folks with the powerful and the privileged don't do dirty work in our society. They perhaps don't do it in any society. But I think that should lead us to think about how in a society as unequal as ours, this the toll of this work, the doing it, the seeing it and suffering the psychic reverberations of it become concentrated among folks with less advantage.
When you think about what can be done about this, I mean, one of the things that you just say, even in the title, is these jobs are essential. So, and you touched on this briefly a moment ago. So how do we do these jobs without taking such a toll?
Yeah, I mean, I think I should say I call them essential, but they're essential to the social order we've kind of accepted, the prevailing sort of social order. They're not unchangeable. So in the case of, the industrial food system, I think there's growing awareness among consumers that, it's environmentally unsustainable, that the treatment of animals is disturbing, that some change is warranted. In the case of jails and prisons, I think there's been a huge shift in public consciousness about how, having built the world's largest prison system, we're coming to question why and what social function does that perform? We haven't yet, I think, come around to severe mental illnesses end up in confinement behind bars, which is sort of the last place they're going to get well. Why have we accepted that? So these things can change, but I think my conclusion in the book is they can only really change collectively. There's only so much every individual can do. So for readers who think, well, I'm going to feel guilty and implicated if I read about these things, that may be true to the extent that I think the responsibility is shared. But I also think that if there are solutions and changes, that too is collective. You can't really do it on your own.
The book is fascinating. It is called Dirty Work, Essential Jobs and the Hidden Toll of Inequality in America. It is published by FSG. Al Press, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Be well. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.